All right, from Matilla's Multimedia in Courtney, BC, you're listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Chef and your host, Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Howlett. We'd like to thank you for joining us again as we explore the food culture of the Comox Valley and beyond.
Well, thank you again for joining in and listening to us. We're going to continue talking about our adventure of enjoying, our Edible Valley here, or the Comox Valley and Vancouver Island. And tonight we're getting into something a little more interesting, and I'm kind of really excited about this conversation. So
yeah, we've been talking about this for a little while. We're joined tonight by a couple of return guests, Ivan Loubier from Ivan's Truffles, and we have Thierry. Am I saying that right? It's Thierry Vrain from Innisfree Farms, and Eduardo Uranga of the CCAC, the group we're going to be talking about tonight.
Correct, right. Yes.
Yes. And welcome. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. Tonight we're going to be talking about this community-created agricultural co-op. Can anybody, or should I defer to somebody in particular that wants to take lead on that? Yeah.
Well, the intention is to promote agriculture in the local community, actually promote the people that live in this community to support the local production of food, the priority being clean food, like antibiotic-free food, named glyphosate-free, Roundup-free. The idea is that it's possible to control the food system that we have by doing it ourselves. It's not coming from the top. It's actually a grassroots situation in which the initiative is to go into agriculture and produce our own food.
Right. Wow. On what sort of a scale?
Well, we're targeting 300 people.
Right.
In the community. Yeah. It's a membership situation in which people actually participate in the creation of the co-op, and in return they get the opportunity to buy as much food as they require from the co-op.
Oh wow, interesting.
So how did this all come to be? How did this all sort of, who came up with this idea and sort of put it forward?
Well, I would like to turn a little bit of this and give it credit to Thierry, because we've been talking about this for many, many years. We met about 8 years ago, and our conversation was based on the fact that we have no control over what goes into the production of the food that we eat. And one of the big things is Roundup and glyphosate.
Together, I think a lot of people are concerned about that.
Yeah. And together with the fact that we have a very powerful enterprise behind the GMO story and the Roundup story, it's something that we can only counteract if we take it in our hands. It's not going to come from the government. It's not going to come from anybody else but us.
Right.
So Thierry is, in my opinion, the core on the response to glyphosate in the Valley and in Canada.
Yes. Right.
It's been 5 years or so, 5-6 years now that I've been very vocal, very public, about warning people that the food is contaminated with the herbicide, which is patented as a antibiotic, which basically means that you're going to end up with lots of chronic diseases if you eat this on a long-term basis, which is exactly what we're seeing for the last several years.
Right.
So in conversation with Eduardo, of course, I talk about my campaign, my crusade, as I call it, and I'm incredibly pleased that he's picked it up and decided to create this project just out of this idea that we need food that is not contaminated with the herbicide.
Yes, absolutely. And I see we've got a copy here of the, the mission statement would be the best way to, it's a 7-page, almost like a manifesto of what you're hoping to achieve or what you're trying to accomplish. Is there a lot of support for this so far? Have you found?
Well, I must say that what is written, that vision document, as mm-hmm. we call it, okay. Comes from the heart. It comes from the sincere effort to actually change how things are done.
Yeah.
And the support has to come from the community.
Yeah.
Now, because of the way agriculture works, we have tapped into the BC Minister of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. I have communicated with the Canadian Minister of Agriculture, mm-hmm. The Agriculture and Agri-Food Minister.
Wow.
And he replied kindly mm-hmm. with saying, okay, this is something that we need to do. You are addressing some of the issues that we already have been looking at.
Oh, wow.
So he actually responded favorably.
Nice.
Interesting enough, this morning I received a letter from the new Minister of Agriculture as well, Alana Popham, just to say, hey, I'm aware that you exist.
Wow.
You know, and this is something that our plans include. So, you know, in other words, the support is there from the provincial and the federal government.
Wow.
We're trying to tap into the support that the federal government wants to implement by literally allowing people to farm mm-hmm. with the support of the federal government. It's in some ways, people think that that's almost impossible to believe that it's actually happening.
Right.
But it is. It is really. And that's exactly what we're tapping into.
Right. That's great. And so in this, I mean, I read this I hadn't read it until just hours ago. John brought a copy over and just said that I should probably read this before we talk. And it's what you outline here. It's pretty daunting, but at the same time, it's pretty inspiring. Like, it seems like it's a lot to try to accomplish, but at the same time, it doesn't seem like it's impossible at all. Like, it seems definitely workable.
Nothing in that document is really... Go ahead.
This is a really big idea.
Yeah.
Really big.
Yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, I find this very interesting, especially right now with Irene hitting mm-hmm. Florida right now and realizing.
Oh, yeah. Irma?
Sorry.
Irma. That's
right. Yeah.
This is what I do. I'm really bad with names. Anyway, so Irma's hitting Florida and thinking about how much, I mean, we're talking a lot about food security and having clean food. And I mean, I'm looking at prices right now, and I'm being warned by distributors and that food prices are going to go up because all our major growing regions in the South are in
underwater,
trouble, underwater, mm-hmm. or have been wiped out,
yeah.
and they're going to have to start from scratch. And so maybe it is this thing that we need to start looking at our own communities, and having that guarantee that we have this clean and mm-hmm. sustainable food. For all of us, right?
And that's what Eduardo was saying too. It's like, this is the last stop, you know, we're on an island.
Yeah.
I call it the last stop in the Pony Express. Because I used to be in the produce business many years ago. I imported mangoes and avocados from Mexico.
Right.
And literally my trucks loaded with mangoes got hijacked at the border with Mexico, United States, and sent to Toronto because Toronto paid better. And literally, there was no problem because they paid me. It's not like they didn't pay me, but the load was coming to Vancouver, but ended up in Toronto.
Wow. Right.
And that is literally what you mentioned is really true. We're having three major areas, Florida, Texas, and California. California is already in trouble. Texas was just hit by Harvey. Right. Florida, Irma.
Mm-hmm.
And
California's on fire right now. So
yes,
yeah.
And we have another issue that is not addressed. But in Mexico, mm-hmm. the southern part, Oaxaca and Chiapas, was just hit by a very big earthquake, and Veracruz was also hit by Katia, another hurricane. So Mexico City is going to need food too. Right. It's 23 million people in Mexico City alone.
Mm-hmm.
So where would you send the food that is supposed to go to United States?
Yes.
Local, it's much easier. Yeah. So, you know, the actual logistics of obtaining food for us, I mean, we have Vancouver in between.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Vancouver is a big
you're right.
A lot of buying power there.
So and then we have this perfect region for growing, and yet we're not growing enough to cover ourselves.
And I'm pretty sure that John is going to see the $30, $35 a case tomatoes, real soon.
It's what? Yeah. I'm already seeing that. I'm just saying you're going to see it skyrocket even higher. Yeah. So.
And the funny thing is, we have the opportunity to grow food locally, but nature doesn't charge us more to produce the food. Mm-hmm. We need water, which we have.
Yeah.
We need climate, which we have. We have the greenhouses that we need.
Right.
It is, you know, transportation. Like all the inputs are there.
Right.
So they really, literally, we can actually freeze the price of food if we choose to. The unfortunate part is that we are limited. We can only target 300 people.
Yeah.
Right. So that can be a model.
Right.
That can be copied later.
So, and again, not to be cynical and not to anything. I mean, I'm really enjoyed talking about this. The part there that I didn't understand was it said there was a buy-in. There was a $1,000 buy-in for these 300 people, and the 300 people then, as a return on their investment, get as a premium. They're still available, like they're able to purchase from there throughout the year, but they get $100 in free vegetables for life.
Yes.
As a return on that investment. And then I thought, oh, well, the cynic in me was like, well, who's going to decide what's $100 worth of food? And 15 years from now, $100 of food might get you three oranges, you know? Mm-hmm. And I realized that I was being cynical, and then I stopped. But then now I realize what you're saying is, in this method, in this model, you can control the pricing because there's really no one to... Right. Yeah.
That is exactly the magic
right.
on this one, is that we actually know how much it costs to produce 1 pound of tomatoes.
Right.
With virtually, because if we do it the way we need to, literally is using technology
right.
to mm-hmm. control the environment, we can actually price a tomato.
Right.
And say, this is going to cost $1.50 a pound to produce.
Right.
And because of the model that we're using, mm-hmm. we don't really need to make profit. We need to just break even plus
right.
a little bit of extra to keep for, you know, contingencies. So because it's a community-driven initiative,
mm-hmm.
the profit is not an issue. It's maintaining the operation, maintaining viability.
Right.
And there's no freight or packaging or anything right. as well. So.
Well, and this is the part that I'm starting to pull out of this for myself, is that you're producing vegetables and food that's not to be traveled long distances. Like I think right. you were talking about the 15 kilometers.
Most people think that the food just comes out of, you know, the ether, right?
Yeah.
But the average Canadian table is at least 2,400 kilometers average.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And that's something that is, they call it externalities. They're not included in the carbon footprint of a mango.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 5,000 kilometers at least.
That's incredible.
An avocado is about the same. And some things like the stuff that we buy from New Zealand, the apples that we're buying in Costco today come from New Zealand.
Right.
So many apples here too.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? I look. There's two apple trees I planted 5 years ago for my son. They're both producing fruit, and yet he wants a New Zealand apple.
Yeah.
When we're in the store, I'm like, are you crazy? No.
So we're so privileged.
I think that's when technology kicks in, because there's technology, and they use to preserve the apples for a year. They put it in a box, literally a cooler, and they put nitrogen or CO2 in.
Right.
With an ethylene absorber that absorbs the gas.
Right.
So it's guaranteed that it's going to last for that.
Right.
And that's the thing I'm saying, is that food is designed for travel.
Yeah.
And that we've created this food market to have these perfect looking vegetables to travel out there with, not actually focusing on flavor.
Yeah, substandard taste for
that
sure.
That apple's now become a product. It's not produce anymore. It's now, this is this product that we do this and this and this to, and ship it and store it and do this, and then we put it out for sale at that point. But it's not really a vegetable or fruit or anything mm-hmm. anymore.
And you're trying to preserve it and adding whatever to it to make this different product.
Just barcode every apple.
Yeah.
So at what point are you on this now, in this endeavor? Where do you stand? Are you looking to... have you acquired land? Are you
okay. At this point, we have, a purchase agreement with mm-hmm. the owner of the farm.
Right.
What we're waiting for is for the provincial government to approve the funds to prepare the business plan that will be tailored to the financial institution that wants to work with us.
Right.
Like, let's say, Vancity or the Bank of Montreal or, right. or any of those that it that shows interest. But we need to tailor that.
Right.
Now, the situation is that it's a catch-22 because the land is there for sale and we need to come up with the down payment. That's where the crowdfunding campaign kicks in.
Right.
The crowdfunding campaign will allow us, I'm going to explain how this
$100
thing works.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's if you put $1,000 into any kind of investment, Microsoft or Google and all that, you get some kind of dividend. But what's not is really not that important is the value of the share.
Right.
Here, we take that away by giving people a perk. Mm-hmm. And if you put $1,000, you get 10% of that for life.
Right.
If you are the original purchaser. Otherwise, if you want to transfer and give it to somebody and all that, you have 10 years of use, so you get your investment back.
Right.
But that is not the important point. The important point is that you create the community, create an agriculture farm, but you get the right to actually participate in the community-supported agriculture model, which is buying your food ahead of time.
Right.
You give us not necessarily all the money, but a portion of the money gradually to finance the production of the food that you will have. Because at the beginning of the year, you just give us a list of what you want and we program the production accordingly.
Wow. That's incredible.
It's it's the production line story, but that's how it's done in other kinds of goods that are being produced. You know, cars are not produced like just massively. You can actually ask for what kind of a car you want.
Right.
And you have it manufactured.
Yeah.
The same thing. It's like if you want 50 pounds of tomatoes for the year,
right,
we will just plant them.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. So in acquiring, like, I guess I'm just trying to understand how far along you are. Like, so in this now, everything seems to be moving forward as per planned?
Yes. And the only thing at this point is, like, we need to drive really hard the point that we need 300 people to participate.
Okay, that was going to be my next question.
Yes.
So how many people have pledged that everything comes together?
At this point, a lot of people are sitting on the fence.
Yes.
Because, you know, what happens is, like, people wait until, oh, is my neighbor doing it or is my friend doing it and all
right.
that. But we have approximately 25 to 30 people already, let's say, sign in.
Yeah, but no, this is, I'm absolutely sold already as soon as I started reading this. And I'm it's funny because my girlfriend and I were having a conversation about this just 2 days ago about if we wanted to get into the box programs and which ones we should do. And then this just seems to be, I know that you didn't come to sell me on it, but I'm sold.
I think one question you want to ask perhaps later is about fostering agriculture in the valley.
Yeah,
we need to replace the people, the farmers.
Right.
There are no young farmers anymore, and Absolutely. Eduardo wants to speak about that.
Yeah.
I was just actually thinking about that.
Well,
it's just where farmers are going, and I know it's definitely cooks are a hard quantity to find right now, too, and I know farms are following that same suit, and it's trying to find people who want to go in, and it's expensive to buy farmland. Especially if you're a new farmer and you have a passion to grow stuff, to get into a farm and buy one is a huge investment. So
yeah, the land,
yeah,
everything.
Sorry.
No, that's it's a very complex situation. I'm gonna throw some statistics. I love numbers.
Okay. Yeah.
6.4% of the farmers in the valley are under 40.
Right.
But 64% are over 55.
Wow.
And there's a big gap in between because it seems like we lost a generation.
There's a full generation just not interested.
Yeah, and it's not interested. The people that own farms today are having to sell, in the case of the dairy farmers, they sell the quota because it's worth, I'm going to throw a number, probably $100,000 a cow.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they get the money out and they go and live in Hawaii, right?
Right.
That kind of thing. And the farm stays here and is left to produce hay because there's nothing else. The other thing is, as you mentioned, is the price of land in the valley is still reasonable.
Right.
You can still buy land somewhere in between $5,000 to $15,000 an acre.
Right.
It's a huge range. But if you compare that to the Fraser Valley, there you're talking about $100,000 an acre.
Yeah.
So we still have an agriculture opportunity that is not being tapped into.
Right.
According to the regional district, of the 23,000 acres that are agricultural land in the valley, 11,000 are idle, really not doing very much.
11,000.
11,000. Most of it is just sitting there doing hay for, you know, just because they need to do something with it. And every year somebody comes around with a tractor and harvests the hay. But that goes to horses.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many horses in the valley.
Right.
It's quite amazing. But I think the core is, as Thierry was mentioning, we need to grow farmers.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, it sounds like it's almost a cartoon situation, because how do you grow farmers? Well, promoting, giving them the entry.
Yes.
But not just a come and work for free.
Right.
That's not right. going to work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have to recognize that being young, you want to start a family, you want to have some, you know, pleasure in life, and at working for free and just getting accommodation and food is not going to cut it.
Right.
So the approach...
I always find that quite funny with farms, is that they always seem to be the one who have it the hardest, yet they're the one with the product.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel that you have these middlemen in there that are skimming off the top from these farmers before it even gets to us. And I kind of wonder, you know, why is this system still in place that we, you know, the person who's producing and keeping us all alive is sort of
stretched the thinnest
to be able to produce. So, and that's the only way you're going to get people really into this industry, or into that industry for sure.
But isn't that necessary? I mean, I don't want to go into all the semantics of everything, but isn't that why we see the interest in sort of the niche farming, people doing very specific little things and doing a sort of boutique spin on it, or and I'm reluctant to use the term hipster, but and I didn't mean to look at you, Ivan. The people doing the smaller boutique things and specializing highly, so that the younger farmer can find more money in specializing in one particular thing and putting some proper marketing behind it and getting a little more value out of it than your salt of the earth general farmer, somebody that wants to do it to produce food for the masses.
But there's one thing that is being forgotten, and I think in the agriculture community, is conviction.
Yeah.
Like, we need to actually believe that what we're doing is meaningful.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, we, the group, the majority, are past our prime.
Yeah.
We are literally on our way out.
Uh-huh.
But we want to leave something behind.
Mm-hmm.
We really want some legacy.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic.
And this is a good opportunity to do it, because knowledge is lost if we don't share it. Knowledge dies with us.
Yeah.
Like Thierry has, if you saw his resume, you would be just like, whoa. Know. You know, it's super impressive.
I'm always honored to be in the same room as him.
I remember John telling me, he's like, you've met Thierry before. And I said, this was a couple months ago, maybe 6 months ago. I said, I don't believe I had. And he just started listing all the things you've done. I'm like, whoa, how have I not met this guy before? But yeah.
Then we have Dave Klassen. That's the other very important piece of this puzzle. He's been a farmer in the valley for like 40 years. His father-in-law owned a farm. He farmed that land. He ran UBC farm for a while. He's got a PhD in animal genetics. He was teaching greenhouse production for the North Island College, and you know, this is like, it's a waste not to use his knowledge.
Yeah.
But you know, the problem is where.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a farm,
mm-hmm.
we can bring him in.
That's fantastic.
We have a bunch
of people. Can't learn all of that on YouTube, I guess.
No.
Especially when it comes from the heart, because he is actually, if you saw his face when he sees his tomatoes growing.
Right.
Or when I see Thierry in his greenhouse and looking at all this fabulous vegetables and cucumbers and stuff, it's just like, I'm really thrilled.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's people. One of my, you know, somebody that is very interested in participating, we grew things together in pots for a long time, like on a tennis court.
Right.
Literally. And my background is totally unrelated, but
right.
I love the idea of being able to apply my engineering knowledge in thermodynamics and you know, fluid mechanics,
right?
Which is related, and it's amazing how much of it is not connected.
Really?
Yeah, and you know, you say that list of things that we're trying to accomplish mm-hmm. is very complex, but we need to have all the pieces together,
right?
Because if we just do one thing or the other, we end up having to, you know, bring what's there that is not working in.
Right.
We need to actually get.
Like all of this feeds into one another. It's all part of a larger system.
Well, that's the value of it.
Yeah.
It's like it's so interconnected that one helps the other. I call it ingenuity gap closure. Like
right.
we have problems, we have technology and solutions.
Right.
We are bringing them together in one pot.
That's what I like when we first started talking about this, is just bringing that technology into it. And I feel a lot of farms have gone to this chemical route, which we all mm-hmm. are starting to find yeah. out the causes from that, and realizing that there's these other technologies out there that can do a lot to make it easier. I guess the fact is it's still hard work mm-hmm. and you can't take the easy way out, but you can get these amazing products with a little bit of work, right?
But we control environment, for instance, for a greenhouse. Right. Like if you look at what the common practice is, it's just, you know, pumping a bunch of heat into a greenhouse to keep it running over the winter, and it's super expensive. Mm-hmm. Most people don't do it. That's why we have California and we have Mexico. Right. But if we use energy if we actually purposely use energy efficiently,
mm-hmm.
first we look for how to save energy. Then we use the energy efficiently.
Right.
Then we produce it at a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm looking at, for instance, is in greenhouses using the new technology, using heat pumps that mm-hmm. are driven by CO2, which
right.
are 450% efficient.
Wow.
You put one unit of energy into the heat pump and you get 4.5 out to put into the greenhouse.
Right.
Like if you, you know, the correlation between the two is amazing, because you end up with literally much easier carbon footprint from mm-hmm. producing your food here than to bring it over, just the fuel to run the truck doesn't compare with the amount of energy that you're putting in.
Right.
So actually balance out one with the other.
So if I may, just in looking at this, I understand that you can't hope to solve all the problems all at once in one specific, you know, design. So this is but this program that you're suggesting or that you've put forth, it's a supplementary? Is like, or is this supposed to be, ideally, this is someone's main food purchase, and then maybe pick up ancillary items outside of this? Or you're trying to potentially draw people into doing away with outside produce altogether, i.e. the produce from California, Mexico, Texas?
Well, I'm going to call it, we need to adapt.
Right.
And if we keep doing it the way we're doing it today, like, you know, bringing oranges from Florida or kiwi fruit from New Zealand or
avocado toast.
Right. Actually, there's one person that is interested in growing avocados inside the greenhouse.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
It's very possible.
Yeah.
And I mean, I come from, you know, the actual... And this uses an example. It's just a few weeks of, you know, mm-hmm. avocado trees don't like freezing.
Right.
So if you can keep them for maybe 6 weeks mm-hmm. from that freezing temperature, you can grow avocados.
Wow.
Here. Because they like colder temperature. All the avocado regions are high in the mountains. Michoacan and all that is like over 2,000 meters up. Altitude.
John and I have had this discussion before. I mean, obviously, we've had the great fortune of being able to talk to tons and tons of people over time, and lots of farmers, and we've talked about it before, that it would be really nice to be able to take a restaurant, not necessarily Atlas, but to take a restaurant and just be able to just look at your local community as being a sole sustainer.
Yeah.
And but you're saying that people's tastes don't always reflect exactly everything's there. You still have to go outside of the community looking for more to you know, keep your customer base happy.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Maybe there are other alternatives that can be done. I don't know.
Well, if you look at the list, there's virtually everything that is needed in a diet.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that are at the top of the list is hemp.
Right.
hemp for food, hemp for grain. It's hemp the oil. Perfect. Hemp, it's the perfect protein source because it's vegetable protein. So we can tap into the vegan community. 30% protein by weight. All the amino acids are there. 22. You have the perfect ratio of omega-3 and omega-6.
Right.
You need that balance. Omega-6 need to be 4 to 1 omega-3s in order to get it, get the bioavailability right.
Right.
And hemp has it perfectly.
Wow.
It is an amazing food, and, you know, people love hemp hearts. But if we can, let's say, adapt to using the whole seed,
right,
then you increase the availability of food value of about 70%.
Wow.
Because when you produce hemp hearts, you lose 70% of the seed.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it's a nice product, but it can, the waste could be avoided.
Interesting.
And
it will be a fiber crop as well.
Yes.
Imagine a future where, you know, I'm talking 10 or 20 years from now, we've been hit by climate change. We're in total climate chaos, which...
I think we are right now.
We are, but, yeah, but, total, you know, like we're barely one degree above average or normal. And look at what's happening already with all the big hurricanes and stuff. And we're predicting 2 to 4.
Yeah.
So it's going to be somewhat catastrophic.
Right.
So I think the time to think of local food production is urgent.
Yeah.
Growing farmers is very urgent. Mm-hmm. Growing our own fibers, growing our own oil seeds is becoming very urgent.
Right.
So it's about food, but it's also a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
It's about the future.
Yeah. Wow, that's incredible. I hope that this is embraced. I think that this is a wonderful idea, and I think that, I think that it's not just an idea to be sold on. It's almost like here's a way of life, and it's not that difficult. You know, it's just here's an improvement to the way that we do things, and it's not that far out of our reach. Like it's right here. Like everybody else should read this. I don't even know where you found it from.
Do you guys find a lot of skeptics when you start telling people about this, or is it generally accepted in this area? Maybe that's...
For me, like, when Eduardo told me about it...
Let's go into that.
Because because...
Why are you here,
Ryan? Yeah, exactly. Why is the chocolate guy here?
And you wanted to come along, and that's great, but yeah.
No, I was a full believer, because Eduardo explained it to me, and, you know, I'd have to get him to explain it over and over again. Because it's so huge. There's so many working pieces, and it's really complicated that I think it was hard to digest all of that information to see the grand picture that it is. It's it's such a big picture.
Well, and that's just it. It sort of seems like you have to, you sort of have to look at everything in a new light. So to do that, you have to wipe clean what your predetermined notions, so that you can look at this at face value, and then you're like, totally. Oh, it's just a completely different way of doing it.
Yeah,
this.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I want to be a member, basically. Yeah. I want to buy my food there.
Yeah.
That makes more sense to me. And to learn, it's such a good opportunity for everyone who's goes through there just to learn something.
Yeah. Amazing.
Let me bring something, because it's really interesting, the way he put it together and the way you're putting it together. Mm. I went to chemical engineering school in Mexico City, and I went to a very, very, very good university. They packed us with all kinds of knowledge, not from even accounting, mechanical engineering, chemical engineering, thermodynamics, mathematics, and all that. And my first job was working for Ford Motor Company.
Oh, wow.
And they picked me because, I did okay in school, but for quality control for the car paints.
Yeah.
So I went and I started looking at all the things. And you look at a car, it's 3,000 parts minimum.
Right.
And the complexity of that industry taught me that if you organize your supply, you can do anything.
Yeah.
And
it's complex doesn't mean it's unattainable.
And that's another thing. It's interesting is on-time delivery was developed in my, when I was there.
Right.
So when you actually have the ability to supply what's needed without having to store it, which is exactly what we want to do, we want to produce when it's needed, then the whole thing is feasible.
Yeah.
because you don't need all this huge storage. You don't need all this super complicated logistics. Right. If you can produce it, the time is needed. And that's something that we can easily achieve with this model.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of people forget with food is the complexities of it, and the storage is a huge issue with it. I mean, I don't even think people realize on this island how many storage food facilities there are where they just warehouse food and then distribute it to, and not just, you think about your grocery store that you go into, all that food that's in there, but there's other warehouses supplying them. And just that whole chain. When if you have
then the central distribution channels.
Yeah, when you have that direct transfer, it's a much easier product, or much easier to do, I guess.
Yeah,
would be my point in that. So,
your question about you know, are people skeptical about the project, etc. When they're presented with it, I think most people are unaware of the fragility of the food system.
Right now, I think that's definitely the case. There's a lot of people, by and large, that. Yeah, they don't realize how delicate the system is and how close we are to ruining the whole system.
That's one of the things that I'm actually trying to avoid, is having to deal with the skepticism, but inviting people that show interest to come to the farm.
Okay.
And so far it's been very successful. Like all the visits end up with hugs and kisses. Literally.
Oh, that's kisses too, eh? Yeah. I miss those tours.
No, it's the people react to the fact that it's actually there. We can hit the ground running. Wow. There's the infrastructure is there. We have water rights. We have greenhouses. We have flat land that needs to be cleared. We have irrigation in the ground that can cover the entire 40 acres.
Wow.
So there's like there's literally nothing that would prevent us.
Hmm.
Although I keep saying that. Artificial intelligence has nothing to do with human stupidity. We can still screw it up. But I think we have a good chance.
Yeah. Well, this is great. I would love to check in with you, or, you know, hopefully we can check in with you as this progresses and see how things develop.
I wanted to actually just talk about the memberships.
Yeah.
So as having this membership and you're paying money to be a part of this, and then you get a return from that. Is there anything else expected of you as being a member of that?
Well, the collaboration part, I mean, people can actually interact with the farm at will. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to come and, you know, spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours a week at the farm and touch your vegetables, that's okay too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think we can afford to actually trade at that time with product.
Right.
Like if somebody comes and said, okay, I'm gonna do this every week for 4 hours, you know,
right,
you know, then the return for them would be also be able to get something
and
take it home.
Right. But you don't have to.
No,
right.
There's
not
no
obligated to, but
no obligation. That's why there's a separation between the production membership and the consumer membership. The consumer membership is based on a contribution and is based on the goodwill of the community to support this. On the production side, there is something that is very important. We are actually promoting farming in a satellite version. Like there's farmers that are involved in this community created agriculture co-op that already have a farm.
Right.
I give an example. There's a pig farmer, somebody that raises pigs. The problem is that they can only do 40 pigs a year because they have no storage for whatever they could do. So offered to them is, okay, why don't you produce enough pork for 300 people, and in exchange, you will have the ability to continue your business, get bigger, and we will provide the storage, the freezer storage on a cost recovery basis.
I also want to say that I think we had him on the show at one point, didn't we? He was just getting into pig farming. No?
I'm not sure.
I'm sorry. I'm recalling something that maybe.
But that's looking at the details. That is the actual, at the top, when we have the tool library.
Right.
The tool library, in reality, is if I happened to me, I wanted to grow rye. So I did put the rye in the ground. And at the end of the season, where do I get the combine to pick it?
Right.
So I looked around, and fortunately that year I found a farmer that has a small combine, only a 6 feet wide combine.
Right.
And he came over and did it in 3.5 hours and charged me $90 an hour, and the grain was there.
Wow.
And then I got stuck with 6,000 pounds of rye because there was no place. The only closest place to clean it was portal burning.
Wow.
So I ended up having to clean it by hand myself, and right. took me 3 weeks. And they ended up with a whole bunch of grain that I share with the community and fed it to my goats and all that stuff.
Right.
But the next year, I did the same, and then that same person says, no, I'm too busy, I can't do it. So we have to just plow it under because we couldn't call it. So the idea is the community created culture will also provide the equipment for farmers that don't have the equipment to do farming on a cost recovery basis. Meaning that they will pay for the depreciation of the equipment, plus the maintenance, plus the operator.
Right.
So with that, it ends up being a third of it would cost to rent the same piece of equipment from the local. Not trying to compete, because there's a lack of...
But that's the nature of a co-op. Is it's cooperative, right?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, we definitely, like I said, we'll definitely want to check in with you as... everything develops, and you know, maybe you can share some success story with us in the near future, hopefully. But I think that about covers everything that we needed to talk about today, does it not, John?
I think so. I think we thank you so much for coming in, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure as always. I don't know if there's anything else you guys wanted to add, or
I don't really feel like I talked at all. That's good. It's rare for me.
Well, we'll have to get you in on another one then.
Yeah, no, it's good. I'm happy to be here.
I think if the co-op happens as we plan it,
yes,
you will see it in the newspaper and you will hear about it. So, you should plan to have us back in a few months.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. That's great.
The only thing that I did like to add to this is we need the community. This is a community-driven initiative.
Right.
So it will be very helpful if, for instance, you decide to participate.
Right.
Share that with others.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, I'm going to say, or maybe we'll be fighting to increase the number.
Right.
From 300 to 400 or whatever. But we need to, you know, get that level of commitment from the community.
Well, that was going to lead to my next question, because I wanted to see if there's anything else you guys want to add. But if someone wanted to get involved and find out more about this, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Just give me a call. My phone number is on the newspaper, and it's 250-898-4874.
Okay. And that you'd be looking for Eduardo to get into this?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, my last name, uranga@shaw.ca, that's my email.
Okay.
So I'm open, and I'm more than happy to schedule a visit to the farm, so they actually have the dream in front of
them. You know what I realized? We didn't even talk. Where is this farm located?
We should have done the podcast at the farm.
Well, maybe we can do the
success one there.
At this point, you know, the farm is located right behind Walmart. It's like right in Courtney. It's actually one of that area is the only farming space that is actually in the city, but it's convenient. It's very close to the shopping area, and it's accessible.
Right. Is that the farm area then? Is that the one that's just off to, if you were heading towards Cumberland, just off to the left?
Yes, right past the railroad tracks.
Right.
On the left-hand side, there's four farms.
Right.
And one of them is right there.
Wow. That's wonderful. So as you said, you're available to go see it. If anybody wants to check it out, it's not that far away. It's right there. So thank you very much, everybody, for coming in. This has been highly informative and very inspiring.
It's got me kind of excited.
Thank you.
That's good, because the last one we did, he was very nervous. So we're going through lots of different emotions.
I got all the emotions today.
Maybe when we experiment that we can run, I love experiments, is to try to see how much of what John needs for his operation can come like truly local.
Yeah.
That would be a very interesting challenge if we can actually provide most or a good chunk of
That would be
what's there.
For sure.
That'd be amazing.
I know it's definitely something I've been definitely working on myself, is just trying to find out exactly how much of each product I go through, mm-hmm. especially, and just getting that on a weekly basis, because it's really easy just to make a phone call and be like, can you have three right. cases of this brought up for me, where they're shipping it from California and then I'm serving it. But yeah, it's,
and I will say, and I'm not trying to, undermine you, John, but the only thing that you're lucky on in that is that your business is extremely consistent, where other people might see yearly fluctuations or dips or whatever. You're sort of like, 1 week is 1 week. It's just the restaurant is always performing more or less the same way it always performs. So you could take an average week and just sort of analyze that. I'd be interested to see how that turns out as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A future podcast will definitely do that one as well. So I guess we should thank our sponsors, Darren.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we can thank Ivan's Truffles, of course. We have a man in the room at the moment. So thank you for your continued support. And thank you to Matilla's Multimedia for giving us the space and equipment to do this. We also have Atlas Cafe. We have their continued support, as well as Butcher's Block. Always been supporting us, as well as Kirsten Wood Music. And I believe that covers all of our current sponsors.
That's a good sponsor list.
Yeah, there's a good sponsor list. There's room for one or two more if anybody's interested. Contact us.
We're always looking for help. And we'd definitely like to thank all our listeners for tuning in and sharing with us some of our adventures through our Edible Valley here. Definitely check us out at all our sites. Definitely iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, our host site for our podcasts, are great places to check out some of our episodes. I think we're getting close to the 150 mark with episodes, so there's lots of episodes out there of all the great things we've learned about this community. Definitely follow us on Twitter. And if you have any questions or ideas or something you'd like to learn a little bit about, send us an email to edibleValley@gmail.com.
Also, I just want to throw this in. If you're interested in hearing any more from the people that we've talked to today, you can go back through our catalog and pull up any of the old podcasts whenever you want. But episode 57 and 94... we've talked to Ivan in a lot more depth, and to Thierry, we had him on episode 41, and then we had his wife, Chanchel, talking about Innisfree Farms on episodes 127 and 129. If you're interested in hearing any more, please check those old episodes out.
All right. I didn't hear those. I'm going to check those out tonight.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks again for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.